To be able to cast a vote freely in an election, choosing who will govern and holding those to account those who have governed is a fundamental human right and a core building block of good government. Although this is a year of elections where people in just under 100 countries will have cast their vote, in very few of them is their vote free or their choice of candidate free. We may be exhausted by 6 weeks of electioneering, but we are privileged to live in the country we do. Governments are held to account. If that is the good news, the less good news is that the issues our new democratically elected government will face are profound. From an acutely underperforming economy to very difficult societal and social challenges. So in this special episode of The We Society, to kick off season six, we've spoken to four leading social scientists to hear their ideas on the issues the new UK government should prioritise and, informed by their research, what they would urge it to do. First, the alpha and omega of success will be the strength of the economy. So let's begin here.
I'm Jagjit Chadha, the director of the National Institute of Economic Social Research. The country has some incredibly serious problems that need to be tackled. And I would suggest two priorities here. And the first is to lengthen the time horizon, not to rush into a 100-day, this is what we're going to do, there are 1,000 things that we're going to get done in the first 100 days. That's absolutely not the way to tackle the deep-set problems of productivity, poverty, lack of infrastructure, exhaustion, lack of public administration abilities that we have in the country. We need to lengthen the horizon. I can tell you, watching policymaking close up for some 30 years now, there's a danger that we're always responding to the last crisis rather than trying to get to grips with the underlying problems. The second follows from that, and that what we desperately need as a country, and it's been short for some 40 years now, is public investment. Public investment in infrastructure, public investment in roads, in schools, hospitals, transport. It's all around us that public investment has not been carried out to the extent that it ought to have been. And this now links back to my other point about the long run. If we can have a commitment for that public expenditure to be laid down in the years to come, because we know that infrastructure spending takes a long time, that will actually crowd in private investment by reducing uncertainty rather than crowding out private investment. A generation ago, the general view was that public investment would crowd out private investment because it would tend to raise interest rates. That's not actually the way it works. If the economy is short of public investment and there's tremendous uncertainty about whether we're going to have the right tools at our disposal in the economy, then that actually leads to a delay in private investment, which we so desperately need. So the former will help the latter and allow the economy to grow.
If you think it obvious that well-considered and significantly higher public investment is at the core of a strong economy, think again. The battle has to be fought over and over. It's the role of social scientists to prove this line of thinking and move it from the realm of ideas to solid policy. Professor Jagjit Chadha again.
There's a whole gamut of research done in the UK, also at places like the World Bank and the IMF, that demonstrates that the economist expression coming up, the multiplier. So if you spend a pound on public investment, in the longer run, that tends to lead to much more than a pound of activity in the economy. So it more than pays for itself. Now, it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. And if we then add in the fact that correctly designed and formulated public investment will also reduce uncertainty in the economy. And yet again, there's a lot of research that does suggest that if you reduce political and economic uncertainty, firms will not delay investment, they will bring it forward. What firms will tend to do is, if they're worried about outcomes, they don't know which way the economy is going to go, rather than risking their reputation and their livelihoods, they will delay investment until that uncertainty resolves itself. And again, there has been a very strong line of work on this over the last 20 years to show that heightened uncertainty palpably leads to a reduction in business investment and a reduction in GDP growth. And I think we can point to the evidence since the Brexit referendum that the uncertainty that ensued, not only about how we leave the European Union, but the form in which we leave the European Union, has been shown to have demonstrably reduced business investment in the UK. You can see the line collapsing after 2016 as a result of uncertainty. So, you know, when we say these things, we don't say them lightly. They're on the back of research done globally and research that has very strong elements of evidence that convinces people like myself. I don't have a strong prior on these things, but over the years you read these papers and you become convinced as to this is the way ahead.
We at the Academy of Social Sciences believe that social science insights and evidence play a vital role in developing policy which creates positive change. So, in the run-up to the UK election, we gathered over 100 social scientists to showcase their ideas on the policies the new government should prioritise, based on robust evidence, for our Academy of Social Sciences Campaign for Social Science Election 24 project. In this special episode of the We Society, we bring you just a few ideas from this project, which covered key policy areas including the cost of living crisis, immigration and healthcare, to name just a few. To find out more about the project and the Academy, go to our website acss.org.uk, acss.org.uk. Next, we go to Lord Joe Johnson, Executive Chair of FutureLearn, a global digital learning platform. As a distinguished former university minister for the Conservative government and former head of the No. 10 Downing Street Policy Unit, he is alarmed by the gathering financial crisis in our universities. The priority is to revise our approach to international students.
International students bring huge benefits in terms of their economic contribution, their social contribution, their cultural contribution. They help sustain our university system and ensure that it is, you know, one of the most open, international and outward-looking in the world. And it's important that the new government ensures there's consistency in policy. We have a sort of a pattern of policy whipsaw with respect to international education in the UK, where periods of liberalisation are followed sharply by periods of repression. And it's important for the sector as it plans its international strategy, as universities plan their international strategies, that we do have a period of stability. And I think that's one of the most important things that the new government should aim for in the coming term.
But how might this happen?
The prerequisite for stability in international student recruitment is that there is some resolution of the funding crisis affecting higher education. We do need to ensure that universities' domestic teaching is not loss-making. And it's this loss-making nature of domestic provision which forces universities to cross-subsidize so heavily from international student recruitment. And also that we properly fund research, again, which is loss-making, and forces universities to seek cross-subsidies from international student recruitment. International student recruitment is a really positive thing for our system, and it's great that universities undertake it, and it benefits our regional economies and our education system in many, many ways. But we should try to avoid baking in dependencies to the extent that we have done in the last 10 years. And the biggest reason for that is that domestic tuition fees, of course, have been frozen for all but one of the last 10 years, meaning that the real terms value has been eroded sharply by inflation. So I think it is important that the new government looks to address this issue. And I think the most important thing that they should do in this respect is to allow the indexation of domestic undergraduate tuition fees. That's to say, allowing them to rise with inflation where universities can demonstrate good student outcomes from the undergraduate experience that they're receiving. The second thing that I think a new government should do once they've put university funding on us on a more sustainable basis is to send a very clear signal to the rest of the world that the UK remains open and welcoming to international students, that there is no cap on the number of international students who are admitted to UK universities, and that international students will continue to be able to benefit from a period of post-study work as now under the so-called graduate route, where students can look for work or work at any skilled level without a sponsoring employer for a period of 2 years after they graduate.
Joe Johnson believes that there is countless evidence underpinning his thinking on the benefits of international students to the UK.
The University's UK reports into it, and most recently, I think you can point to the Higher Education Policy Institute, London Economics, UUKI, that's UUK International, report which found that international students bring benefits each year of about £42 billion to the UK economy, staggering amounts to each individual constituency in the country. So there's copious evidence of the benefits that international students bring, and also of the damage that would be done to our university system were that source of funding to be disrupted in any way.
If good quality education is a fundamental right for citizens in the UK, so should good quality universal adult social care. Recent NHS numbers estimate that 1 out of 3 hospital beds are used by people who are medically fit to leave but don't have care packages waiting for them at home. They're essentially stuck in limbo, and so are the people who need these hospital beds, who find themselves on endless NHS waiting lists. Here we speak to a social scientist who thinks they have a solution for the new government.
My name is Catherine Needham. I'm Professor of Public Policy and Public Management at the University of Birmingham in the Health Services Management Centre. Adult social care should be a priority for this new government because looking after older people and making sure that older and disabled people have good lives and can flourish is such a vital priority in a society that considers itself to be a fair and just place for people to live. The policies that the next government should prioritise around adult social care need to be considered in the light of some really good legislation that's currently on the statute books. So what we do not need is to go back to the beginning to have another Royal Commission. We've got some good legislation. We've got the Care Act 2014. We've got the care cap on spending. So what we really need is to think about how to implement this legislation properly. And one of the reasons that the legislation hasn't been implemented is because there isn't enough money in the system. So the first priority has to be money. So social care spending has gone up in recent years, but the problem with that is it's all been ad hoc, not the kind of money that allows local authorities who oversee the social care system to make proper long-term spending and investment in making sure that what we're delivering in adult social care is a system that really supports quality, dignity, and good lives for people. We see when local authorities are working with health partners in integrated care systems that on the NHS side, they've got ring-fence money. They know what that's going to be over the longer term. And local authorities can't approach those conversations as equal partners when they're just dealing with little pots of money here and there and no sense of a kind of long-term settlement. The second priority for adult social care reform is to really make sure that the people who provide the majority of the care, the unpaid carers, really get proper support to make adult social care flourish as a sector. 2/3 of adults at some point will be a carer for another adult. So that's 7 in 10 women and 6 in 10 men. So we've got, again, some good legislation on the statute books. The Care Act 2014 makes provision for every carer to be entitled to an assessment of their needs and appropriate meeting of those needs. But because of the financial situation, that legislation just has not been implemented properly. And we also need to make sure that the carer's allowance is increased. We need to put up that earnings limit, which has not kept pace with incomes and rising living costs, so that people who are doing that intensive caring work get proper support and are not living in poverty whilst providing care for a loved one. Now, as part of the ESRC Centre for Care, we've been looking at social care as an ecosystem and understanding the interrelationship of the different parts of the ecosystem. Because one of the things that we find is that if you make a change in one part of the system, so if you increase pay for care workers, for example, unless you really think through the knock-on consequences of the rest of the system, then what you'll find is that care providers, for example, can no longer afford to pay care workers. Care providers go out of business, and then you've actually got less provision in the sector. And so you're kind of creating a problem over here.
While developing policy is one part of a social scientist's role, undertaking the research to underpin these policy ideas is just as important. Professor Needham again.
One of the ways in which we've sought to understand how the kind of policy mix works is by looking at the devolved administrations in the UK, because it's important to note that this election was really about adult social care in England, because adult social care is a devolved responsibility in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. Whereas the Liberal Democrats were proposing free personal care for England, we can kind of consider that by looking at the Scottish example, where they've had free personal care for a couple of decades now. And we can see that it's had some potential benefits in terms of people not having to pay for care through the means test in the way that they do currently in England. But that it has also had some potentially problematic consequences because of local authorities not being able to invest so much in prevention and early intervention, because it's really better to keep people out of the care system for as long as possible rather than to pay their costs when they get into the care system.
A broader existential threat that affects all of us is climate change. The evidence is unambiguous that weather patterns are changing and terrifyingly accelerating. There's only one Earth, and the older I get, the more bewildered I am by its precious beauty. We all know we need to change our behaviours, and that sustainable practices, whether prioritising train travel, using electrical vehicles, or being scrupulous over waste disposal, are an imperative that impact on all of us. But there's resistance to change from many quarters. What should governments be doing to help us?
My name's Lorraine Whitmarsh. I'm a Professor of Environmental Psychology at the University of Bath, and I'm Director of the UK Centre for Climate Change and Social Transformations. The reason that behaviour change is so important for this new government to consider is because we know that technological change by itself is not going to be enough to reach our carbon targets. We're not going to get to net zero with technological change by itself. We need very substantial behaviour change as well across all sections of society. So within households, within business, within communities, within government. And the other reason why it is important to consider behaviour change is because actually there are wider benefits that can come through a lot of these behaviour changes. So it's not just about reducing emissions, it's also about improving our quality of life, our health, our prosperity, and so on. For me, the top two policies that the new government should prioritise are, first of all, having a UK-wide public engagement strategy on climate change. We know that it's absolutely critical that we have the public on board if we're going to make the sorts of changes needed to tackle climate change. And we know that participatory decision making is better and leads to more acceptable outcomes. So providing a stronger voice for the public in decision making should be part of that strategy, but also measures to reduce or remove the barriers to behaviour change that people are currently facing to taking climate action. So we need all of that to be wrapped up into a coherent strategy at the UK level, which we don't currently have. My second policy priority would be a nationwide programme of retrofit. So we know that we haven't made very much progress in terms of reducing emissions within the housing sector and on the demand side. If we insulated homes, that would make a massive difference to reducing emissions, but also it would help cut energy bills at a time when they are very high and we're facing a cost of living crisis. And we know from our latest polling that there is very strong support for energy efficiency measures from government. So this would be actually one of the top policy priorities that the public would support. The research that underpins my thinking in this area comes from 5 years of CAST research, our centre research, where we've really shown that the importance of more inclusive decision making on climate change, that actually bringing people with you leads to more acceptable and better quality outcomes. And also that there are very fundamental barriers to behaviour change that people face at the moment. People do want to play a part in tackling climate change. We know that from our surveys, from the interviews, focus groups and other work that we've done. But they consistently say it's too expensive, it's too inconvenient, and it's just too difficult at the moment. So we need government to take a much stronger approach to reducing those barriers to behaviour change. The other thing that's come out, and which is why I mentioned the importance of things like retrofit and energy efficiency programmes, is that we know that public support is higher for policies which provide wider co-benefits. In other words, additional benefits like reducing energy bills, for example. So we see those sorts of measures that provide wider benefits as being the more publicly supported.
So there you have it, the evidence speaking out. We do know what to do to make things better, but as one famous politician once said, the problem for us politicians is winning an election after we've done what's right. I think that's too defeatist. We need politicians with the chutzpah and daring to do what's right, explain and to keep on explaining why it must be done, and so carry the people with them. In this dialogue, social science has a crucial role to play. In this special Election 24 episode of the We Society, you've heard from Professor Catherine Needham, Professor of Public Policy and Public Management at the University of Birmingham, Jo Johnson, Executive Chair of FutureLearn, Professor Jagjit Chadha, the Director of the National Institute of Economic and Social Research, and Professor Lorraine Whitmarsh, Director of the UK Centre for Climate Change and Social Transformations. To read more ideas from other leading social scientists and learn what policies they think the new government should prioritise as part of the Academy of Social Sciences Campaign for Social Science Election 24 project, go to acss.org.uk. In the upcoming season, we'll be putting Brexit, UK drug policy, child carers, the UK rental crisis, amongst other meaty topics, under a social science microscope, so be sure to subscribe now, wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. I'm Will Hutton, the producer Emily Finch, and this series has been brought to you by the Academy of Social Sciences, and it's a Whistledown production.